Log Talk Radio.
Got it? Yay! Blog Talk Radio.
What happened?
Log Talk Radio.
Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and RumRadio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe. I would like to acknowledge WNAH, Hoyt Carter, and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky, and Arkansas as a public service presentation. We would also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals, and they afford us some print space from time to time. I'd greatly like to introduce my co-host, Harold B., a family intervention specialist. He does a fine work with troubled families and personally believe the families are the basic unit of our society, and as the family goes, so does the nation. Harold?
Hello, everybody. Thank you, Joseph, for that introduction. And it is my honor to be here and help everyone understand the importance of working with others in the 12-step program of Alcoholics Anonymous. The program is very important to me, the people and the rooms of AA, and my sponsors, and working the steps. Very, very important. This is a life and death struggle. It's a warfare, actually, and people do get picked off. This disease wants us to suffer and eventually die. And so working these steps is the way we stay away from alcohol and stay in recovery. The way we stay away from resentments and stay in recovery. The way we stay away from relapse and the craving. The interesting fact about addiction to alcohol is that with alcoholics, we have a peculiar combination of an allergy combined with a craving. And so if we take that first drink, we cannot predict what's going to happen the rest of the evening or the rest of the day or the rest of the year. So we have to, above all else, abstain completely from alcohol and drugs. Bill W. had quite a bad problem with pills. And I think people in AA have forgotten that, and we should not forget that, because that kills a lot of people. In fact, I think it was shown recently that Whitney Houston had a combination of alcohol and pills, and that's what stopped her breathing. So here we are, and we have an opportunity to work with other people. I chaired a meeting this evening, and in that meeting we had a person who was attending his first AA meeting ever. And so the topic of our meeting tonight was step one, and I asked people to describe what they were like, what happened, and what they're like now, so that this young man could understand that we've all been where he is. And it was a wonderful meeting. We got him a copy of the first 164 pages and a chip that reminded him, no matter what, today, do not drink. Take this one day at a time. People told their stories, and he may have heard his story from someone else's mouth this evening. So it was a wonderful meeting, and he stayed a few minutes after and talked to people and met folks, and it was the way AA is supposed to work. So it's my honor and privilege to be part of this recovery program, this 12-step program. It's important to me, and I want to do what I can to help this program attract more and more people into recovery. It's a program of attraction, not promotion. And although we do promote working with others, because that succeeds when a lot of other things fail. Working with another alcoholic is what helped Bill W. stay clean and stay sober in his early days. He was tempted to drink. He worked with Dr. Bob, and he went to Dr. Bob's house, and Dr. Bob said, "You can't make me stay sober." And Bill W. said, "Well, I'm not here for you. I'm here for me. This will keep me sober." So Dr. Bob agreed to give him 15 minutes, and I think 6 hours later, they were still talking. So we have a great program scheduled for tonight, and the idea is to get back to the basics and return to the book and the materials the way it started in 1935. So let's take it away. Joseph?
Thanks, Harold. I'd like to give the phone number in case you'd like to call us up and join the discussion. If you have something to add or some question, you'd be happy to add that into the program. 949.
We're live every Sunday night, yes. So if you're listening on Sunday night, we're probably live.
949-534-0621. Again, 949-534-0621. If this is Monday Night Rewind or Saturday Night Rewind, then there's no call-in. It's only Sunday night that we're live. Might expand in time, but right now that's the way it is. I'd like to start the program with the third step prayer. It's one of the prayers I give to my new sponsees. One of their first assignments is to pick up the 500-pound telephone, call someone on their newcomers list. Usually I suggest they get a newcomers packet or get names of at least 20 or 30 men in the program who voluntarily give their phone numbers for calls, and pick up that 500-pound telephone and call one of these fellows every day, different guy every day, and ask them to, if he get permission to recite the third step prayer to them. And that gets them used to picking up the phone, asking for help, connects them up with their home group and fellowship. It encapsulates what we're going to try to accomplish by working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And fourthly, the person he's calling might have been thinking about picking up his first drink of alcohol, and when he hears the prayer, chances are he will not. So this is the third step prayer. It's found on page 63 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is our basic text. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that?
Amen. That's a wonderful prayer. We want to do God's will. I'm here because I want to be more useful to God.
That reminds me of there was a motivational speaker, and up on the stage he had three men, and he wanted to ask them a probing question, and he asked each one of them the same question, and wanted to find out what their response would be. And first one he asked was a doctor. He says, "Doctor," he says, "when you're lying in your coffin and people are looking down over you, what do you want them to say?" And the doctor thought for a minute, and he said, "I want them to say I was the very best doctor he could be. He helped a lot of people. He was really a member of the community, society, a good husband, a good father, and a credit to his community. Thank you, doctor. And the next fellow is an attorney. He says, tell me what you want people looking down in your coffin. What do you want them to say? And the fellow turned around and he said, well, I want him to say he was the very best attorney he could be. He honored and sustained the law. He was a sterling member of his community, a good husband, a good father, and a worthy church member. And the third fellow was a truck driver, and he said, when people are looking down at you in your coffin, what do you want them to say? And he turned around and says, I want somebody to say, look, I think he just moved.
Oh, tonight, I like it.
Tonight we're going to be working on step 9 from the 12 and 24. That's taking someone through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, or the 12 steps. I keep saying Alcoholics Anonymous, but the site and this program is really about 12-step recovery. This could be used for any 12-step situation. Could be overeaters, Gamblers Anonymous, Al-Anon. What else we have? Artists Anonymous. I believe there's even a Paranoids Anonymous. The only problem is nobody will tell you where they hold the meetings.
There's an anonymous meeting for preachers and ministers. It's called On and On Anon.
On and On and On Anon.
I see.
The point is that we use the 12 steps and the big book because that's the fundamental template for all the other 12-step programs. That's the template. So we use the template, but if you wanted to use this information, you use a little creativity. You put your conference-approved literature into the slot where the big book and the 12 and 12 would be. And except for the first step, it's all exactly the same. So addiction to me is addiction is addiction. One thing you said, Harold, attraction, not promotion. Nobody ever finishes the statement. And press, radio, and films. We've done an injustice to many people in the program by saying that, clipping that out and letting it stand on its own. And it's gotten a life of its own. It's specific to press, radio, and films. We promote in the rooms of AA. We promote in other 12-step programs. We promote a better way to stay sober.
Promote dinners, and there's a sober cruise that we promoted tonight in the room during the announcement time. We promote the intergroup telephone answering system. We're getting geared up to do that as part of our service work. We promote a lot of things,
especially the promotion of helping the next sufferer attain and maintain sobriety in AA. That's our biggest promotion. All from what I studied on the 12 traditions, which is our bylaws for the groups, is to answer one question. Does it divert us from our primary purpose, or does it enhance it? That's the only question that needs to be answered when somebody's discussing the traditions. If it does not divert us and it enhances, then sign me up. The last sentence on page 164 in the big book says, this book is only meant to be suggestive. We know so very little. More shall be revealed to both you and to us. Also in the big book it says, see where religious people are right or wrong or someone else. Open-mindedness is like a parachute. It only works when it's open. Contempt prior to investigation. You can have contempt after investigation, but not before. And the rest of it is principles before personalities. And the reason those concepts are in the big book because the alcoholic self will run riot, but he doesn't think so, are these problems. We are not open-minded. We do have contempt prior to investigation, and we'll put a personality over a principle in a heartbeat. That's why they're in the big book. That's why one of the lessons that alcoholics or I need to learn. Okay, so that's enough out of that, and let's get into the program.
Move through these materials, our listeners will notice that at times we're commenting, other times Joseph is reading right from the material that's on the website, and part of it is written by Michael M., and tonight's topic is step 9. So we'll try to give you an idea when we're reading and then when we're commenting. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Step 9, the full measure balances the scales of justice. The simplicity of the 12 steps, step 9, is justice. On page 83 of the book, 12 Step and 12 Tradition, it reads, good judgment and a careful sense of timing, courage and prudence. These are the qualities we shall need when we take step 9. It seems they are cautioning us to bear in mind that this is a step whose process must be attended to cautiously, as this is really the first time we are welcoming the outside world into our process. Up until now, any step with which we were to employ half measures probably stood to hurt no one beyond us. But with this step, with step 9, it was our impulsive or reckless, we run the risk of damaging others. And clearly, this would be the opposite of the task at hand. Consequently, the book does a marvelous job specifically delineating not just how to make amends, but how to make a proper amends. We are given some introductory information on the task of amends on page 76, about halfway through the third paragraph. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any length for victory over alcohol. Harold?
Absolutely. This is such an important step, and to sit down with our sponsor and go through this process is so important. I felt very confident as I went into this process with my first sponsor. He was very diligent. He was very careful to stick to what's written in the big book. Everyone called him a big book thumper, and I was really grateful to have him as my sponsor, and we went through the steps together. I made my list in step 8 and became entirely ready willing to make amends to everyone on the list, and then got busy and worked my amends. The interesting thing about my list was my sponsor said, is your name on that list? Because with my drinking and drugging, I had done terrific harm to myself. And so I added my name, and what I realized is that really the amend that I needed to make to myself was one they call a living amends, where I put forth the effort to finish my college degree. And so I did that. And I did the other amends as well, and it makes such a big difference in my life of recovery today. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. I'm going to go back to we agreed in the beginning to go to any length. It's one of the qualifiers I use for my prospect. I believe the term prospect is a sales term, and a prospect needs to be qualified. So when I get a new sponsee or someone I pick out to sponsor, first thing I'll ask them, have you had enough? Yes or no? Are you willing to go to any length to achieve victory over alcohol? Yes or no? If I get two affirmatives, then I'll tell them, you can get well from this disease of mind, body, and spirit, but there's certain things you have to do. And I give them Clancy's 7 questions, and I said, first thing I need you to do is answer these 7 questions, and I need them back tomorrow. Here's my number. I expect your call. Works out really well. If they don't call, it's not like I'm going to hear from them next week or the dog ate their homework. I just don't hear from them. If they're serious, they're qualified, they qualify themselves. I get the call the next day, and we're off to the races. The success rate using this method has been really, I'm really pleased with that, and taking them through in a timely manner. It gets them moving quickly. I believe a lot of sponsors don't ask the question, are you willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? Not only are they telling their sponsor, but they're telling themselves. Sometimes in a meeting, Alcoholics Anonymous, the most important thing you're going to hear in that meeting is going to gingerly fall from your own lips. After a quick check-in to make sure that we, in fact, had become willing to make all of the amends on our 8-step list, they called to our attention the verbal agreement we willingly entered back into page 58. It would seem that the book's authors correctly understood that the doorstep of the amends process is a point at which many an alcoholic takes great pause. They clearly believe that this would be an appropriate time to call the prospect's attention back to the 2 questions they were asked prior to step 3 in regard to their preparedness for step work. At that point, they had apparently decided that they wanted what we had and that they were willing to go to any length to get it. When we first posed with those questions, many of us were benefited with the glorious gift of desperation, leading us to a pledge, a commitment without needing a firm understanding of what any lengths might look like. Oftentimes, this is the point at which we find out. Correspondingly, it is not surprising that at this point at which they choose to overtly reveal to us the underlying purpose of this whole process. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It is critical to understand that our real purpose is not to cease using drugs and alcohol. It is not to feel better or happy. It is not even to work the steps. It is to be of maximum service to God and our fellows. We need to put down the substances to properly work the steps, and we work the steps to achieve our real purpose. This is the reason that the steps conclude with the words, practice these principles in all our affairs. That's what it's about. This, of course, does not need to be any individual's real purpose, but it is unequivocally our real purpose. And our pioneers are letting us know that, daunting as this amends mission may seem, without it, our real purpose could never be achieved. With the basic framework explained, the book now breaks down for us 5 different kinds of amends we may find ourselves facing. First, in the first paragraph on page 77, we get some information on the amends made to people we don't like. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him, and though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we are still not keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It's harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feelings and expressing our regret. Harold?
Yes, that's it's very, very important, and I was so glad to have guidance as I went through this whole thing. Let's keep going, Joseph.
Okay, Harold. One of the things I found when I have work a ninth step with a sponsee, that there's usually one sticking point, sometimes more, but usually there's one that stands out more than the rest. This is the amends that the person figured that they were never going to do, that this was going to go to the grave with them, that they were so frightened or anger about it that they had all this rationalization. And until they did that one particular one, it doesn't have to be done first and surely not last, but it has to be done. As soon as they do that one particular one, the one they don't want to do the most, that's when the promises start to materialize. They're abandoning themselves to the care and comfort of an all-loving God, trusting like they've never trusted before, and great things come to pass. But I've had sponsees that just wouldn't do it. I had an attorney sponsee, and he had a little rancor with his next-door neighbor. And one night, he keyed his neighbor's car. And he looked at his neighbor like less than him. You know, he's a professional man, and they're kind of blue-collar next door and not as educated and et cetera. And he's the one who keyed the car. And I suggested to him that he should go up to the person and tell them and be willing to make whatever restitution was necessary to close that chapter. He's not going to do it. I've suggested several times, but all I can do as a sponsor is suggest it. We went through the rest of the steps, and he's doing fine. He's being abstinent. I'm not there to play God with him. I can only suggest what I think the consequences of failing to do that would be, and I believe some of that is that he's not going to have the quality of sobriety that he could have had. But I don't know that. All I know is what I my experience would tell me. But that's why it's really important to do the one, to that embarrassing moment, that humiliation, you know, and coming to that agreement would have had him grow so much that he would not believe it. But the ego is a hard thing to break, and it doesn't go out without, it doesn't come down without a fight. Vanity, vanity, all is vanity. The ego will sacrifice the body on the altar of pride in a vain attempt to stay alive. The preacher said, vanity is a vanity. All is vanity. What do you think about me? It's quite useful, and now we're going to read, and it's quite useful to let the prospect know that these more difficult amends will actually carry more spiritual weight and bring him closer to God than the supposed easy ones. Additionally, it is worth noting that the book, throughout the breakdown of the step, offers a variety of terms such as regret, remorse, ill feeling as possible alternatives to the use of the term I'm sorry. Sorry, so, so sorry. So, so what? While the word sorry does show up a few times in the step, they are generally referring more to feeling sorry than to saying sorry. In fact, the only time they even infer that using the term might be useful as with one's creditors, and it seems that this is mostly driven by an understanding that with bullying Shylocks or nameless, faceless corporations, a little groveling might be necessary. Beyond that, self-love and self-forgiveness is often bolstered by the realization that all these things occurred as a result of an illness. Therefore, we are not responsible for them, but we must be accountable. We're not responsible, but we are accountable. With this in mind, a statement like, I regret my behavior, is generally more in keeping with our message than I'm sorry. I also tell my sponsees, I'll tell them, if someone says anything about it, just say, I don't want to be like that anymore.
There you go, yes.
Second, we told more about an amend to someone, person who has also done something to us which we understand to have been harmful. Under no conditions do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply, we tell him that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so, never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be grateful with the results. Harold?
Yes, there's so many sponsees I've worked with where I believe also in the part of the big book that says we should talk to the families as well. And I've talked to many families, and so many spouses say, I got so tired of hearing, I'm sorry. And some of the wives said, are you sorry for that you got caught, or are you sorry for inflicting the pain? So what I've done many times is help a man sit down and write out an apology, and as part of the apology, write out all the different types of pain that he realizes he has caused. And what I'm talking about is with a situation and a family where he has a family involved, he has caused his spouse the pain of embarrassment with her family, embarrassment with her friends, perhaps embarrassment in the neighborhood, that some of the things that he has yelled or done have the neighbors have heard. There's also the pain, the legal pain. He may have been drunk and violent and carted off by the police on a domestic violence charge, there are legal costs. There's financial pain that comes with all of that. He may have caused employment pain. He may have lost his job, and that also includes financial pain. He may have embarrassed them many times at parties, so there's social pain involved there. It may be physical pain, because when some people get drunk, they go through a personality change and they become violent and will hit. There may be a CPS case because he has been drunk and hit the kids. And they go to school, and their bruises require the teacher to file a report, and there we go. You know, that could be a separate category of pain in itself, CPS pain. On and on and on. And so the thing that just leaves me cold is when someone says, well, if I've hurt you in any way, I'm sorry. What are you kidding? If I've hurt you in any way, he needs to list each and every type of pain that he's caused other people, so that number one, they know that he knows, and number two, he can show some remorse in the situation. So that's what this thing comes down to. And that's why it's really important to go through this process with someone who's level-headed, thinking clearly, and can help him avoid the, well, I'm sorry if I've caused you any harm. That really wears thin. Most spouses have heard, I'm sorry, 80 million times, and they're really sick of it. So I suggest that we avoid that word completely and make a written apology for many, many things that have occurred. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. You can even get an apology from a recording announcement now. When I have a low-level someone on the phone from a telephone company or whatever, they apologize, I'll always ask them, well, what did you do wrong? And they'll go, well, I didn't do anything wrong. I said, well, I don't understand your apology. I've even talked to some people usually early in recovery, and they usually say, well, I really didn't hurt anyone but me. And that I've never found to be the case, never.
Never.
There's always a broken heart, there's a broken job, there's a broken car, a broken house. Something's broken because they were there or I was there. So
you have worried your mother. Please.
And your father died in pain. And yeah. Well, all that. We're like tornadoes roaring through people's lives. So to say that, you know, I always like what people say, you know, I really need to make the amends to myself. Well, why don't we leave that for later? Let's get to the other folks, and then we'll see what they have to say before we get back to you. There is no ambiguity at this point, regardless of the actions of the other person, even if we believe their harm to us to be far worse than the damage we did to them. We are not to mention one word about their behavior. But I'm a victim, don't you understand? I've been victimized by all these people. When I brought my first four step, I ran out of room. And in the way the big book has it, the last section is my part. And I kept running. First, there was only a little margin, and then there was no margin at all. And my sponsor said, well, where's your part? I says, well, you don't understand. I'm a natural victim. All these people did things against me. And it wasn't until I took responsibility and really took a good look what was going on, it made all the difference for me. Most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors, telling them what we are trying to do. We make no bones about our drinking. They usually knew it anyway. Whether we think so or not, nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial harm. Approach in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Arrange the best deal we can. We let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them. And then they address criminal amends, reminding us that courage and thoroughness are the watchwords for successful and lasting recovery. Oscar Wilde said, no man could buy back his past. But that was before the installment plan. So there's always some way, even if it's $5 a month, a dollar, whatever, you know, they might feel insulted, but if that's all you have, well, then that's all they get. And sometimes things come along. I've heard all kinds of miraculous stories where the fella made enough money where he paid off a debt that he would have never, ever imagined that he would have been able to do so once he took that step. Perhaps we've committed a criminal offense which might land us in jail. If we were known to the authorities, we may be short in our accounts and unable to make good. Embezzlement. We have already admitted that in confidence to another person, but we're sure we would have been imprisoned or lose our job if we were known. Although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding. Reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any length to find a spiritual experience. We ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything. I had a sponsee one time, and the question came up, and the answer is, if he's married and by going to jail would deprive his family or his children of the necessary resources, then he would be harming someone else. So in that case, that has to be done anonymously. But something needs to be done. And the key to this is that it doesn't harm someone else, directly or indirectly, or making a bad matter worse. Those are the only considerations when we go forward for this. If you're going to go to jail, guess what? You might have to go to jail. If that's what it's going to take, and you're a single guy, and nobody's depending on your income, it might be the Crossbar Hotel for you, and you can bring the message into there. My experience, that doesn't often happen. People are very forgiving when you have humility and are willing to take responsibility. There's some. Lastly, on page 83, the book addresses the part of the step which speaks to hedging on our direct amends when it might cause further harm. There may be some wrongs that can never be fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter, and there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it could be avoided. Harold?
Yes. I was watching a wonderful recovery video put together by Hollywood Henderson, Thomas Henderson of the Dallas Cowboys, 1975, and he talked about his process of getting away from drugs and alcohol, or trying to get away, and this process of making amends, and this process of going to jail. And he got recovery before he went to jail, and so he took the program into jail with him. In fact, he saw his jail time as an opportunity to learn how to really live. He had never learned how to be a friend, and he wanted to do that in there. So he took the program in with him, his recovery books and his attitudes, and so it wasn't long until the other inmates were heard saying, uh-oh, Henderson is gonna preach to us again. Let's get out of here. He's going to preach again. And so many people see a stay in jail as an opportunity to spread the good news. And but I agree that the distinction is, will this cause harm to others indirectly? And we've got to think it through and think about it with another person in recovery, with our sponsor, so we can do the next right thing. Joseph?
Thanks, Harold. Hollywood Henderson, I've met him several times. He won the lottery in Austin. And that's quite a good story, right? He went through that, and then he wins the lottery. Wow, there's something spiritual is going on there. You know what, Harold?
Thomas Henderson of the Dallas Cowboys?
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't know that part of it.
You want to hear something a little bit more interesting?
Yes.
He won it twice.
Oh, my goodness.
More the second time. I think he made several million the first and then 10 million or something the second time. There's
wow.
A drugstore in Austin that he bought the tickets at, and it's had the most lottery winners than any other place in Texas. People flock to that drugstore.
I bet.
I think there's a connection between his spiritual attitude about willing to go to prison, growing, and carrying the message, and him winning the lottery. And then a lot of that money the second time. He kind of squandered the first a little bit. He had a lot of issues, like most people were not used to being very rich in a very short period of time. And the second time, though, he had gone through his learning curve and has a foundation and helps with a great deal amount of that money.
Wow.
Yeah, so I also like to tell a story of Danny B. He was in my home group, and I was there the first time he told a story, and I know him and his sponsor, John Henry. He was the third man in a felony robbery. And he had gone so far down the scale that his sponsor, John Henry, told him that the only way he was going to be able to attain and maintain long-term sobriety was that he was going to have to turn himself in. Now, I can't say, I'm not there, and so I hadn't prayed about it, and don't know. I don't know personally if I could have done that. I doubt that. Been that eager to trust God in a situation like that. I don't know. And as a sponsor, I can only make a suggestion, and I always make my sponsees aware that I can only give them a suggestion. I can't tell them what to do or what not to do, and that we'll continue working the steps, whatever they decide, as long as they do some of the amends. But he did that. He took his sponsor's direction, and he went to the detective who was handling the case, and he told him that he was working an AA program, and that part of the program was that he needed to come in and confess that he was the third man in that felony robbery. The detective turned around after a pause and said, "The man who did that robbery would have not come in and gave himself up. Why don't you go home?"
Well,
Danny always concludes that talk with, "I'm in AA. I'm in AA for life." Funny speaker. If you ever go to speaker tapes and you listen to Danny B, if you have a conference or anything going on like that, he's well worth the effort to get him in. He goes all over the world. Funny, funny guy. He's entertaining. But the message is good. He also coined the phrase osmosis. I use it all the time. But that's his. That was his. That I sit in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and instead of working an honest 12-step program, I'm going to get this program through the process of osmosis. I'm going to put myself in a chair, and somehow the message is going to come through the floor, up the legs of the chair, up my ass, and into my brain. And that's the process of osmosis. Not doing the work. Sitting in the meetings. So that's the stuff you get out of Danny. Okay, back to the topic. This can be a tricky area, as many alcoholics look to use it as a loophole, proclaiming, "Well, any amend I make could hurt someone. So maybe I shouldn't make any of them. Somebody's going to get hurt somewhere. I'm sure there's a Eskimo on the Poland ice cap that'll be hurt by this amend." What we look to distinguish here, with the help of our higher power, is the difference between hurt and harm. As an example, if you had stolen some money from your buddy, but he doesn't know about it, telling him the truth might hurt his feelings some, but it will not harm him, especially if you pay him back. On the other hand, if you slept with your buddy's wife and he doesn't know about it, and upon your ninth step, the marriage is still active and they have children, you'd want to avoid possibly contributing to the undoing of a whole nuclear family system in an effort to feel better. Additionally, these sorts of amends can also be made through, though generally they're best handled indirectly or discreetly. Some things never need to be said. We can't get our peace of mind on the other guy's dime. If it causes any distress, real or imagined, we are supposed to counsel with our sponsor and with prayer with God. Ultimately, you're responsible to God. Your sponsor is just a temporary conduit to help you get to that point in life. So God comes into this in a big way, and this is where we're starting really counting on God. Now, we need the direction from an independent third party, which is your sponsor. But the sponsor, again, can only give you his experience, strength, and hope. What he believes will be the result of your actions. But that's all you can do. You can't do anything else. I like to think of experience as an inventory of our past mistakes. That's how we relate to each other. Strength is the ability to lift and carry. We lift our fellows and we carry the message. That's what keeps us sober. And hope is the belief that our lives will continue to improve when we do the next right thing. That next right thing is not to take that first drink of alcohol. To clean house as outlined in the 12 steps found in our basic text, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and to always trust in God and the process that he gave us. So when it comes to a sponsor is limited as to the direction he can give you, only through his own experience. That's it. The rest of it is up to the sponsor in a prayerful manner to decide whether this is something he needs to do or wants to do. I can tell you what the consequences, what I think might be, according to the big book in the 12 and 12 of my personal experience. But other than that, it remains the decision of the sponsee. I believe that the 12-step program, one of the fundamental cornerstones, is free agency or free will. We don't tell anybody what to do. We can only make suggestions, which are, you know, somebody referred to, like, if you jumped out of an airplane, your sponsor was there and he suggested to pull the ripcord. But it's your decision, not your sponsor's. The ideal way to make every amends is face-to-face, mano-to-mano. And we must have the willingness to do just that. With that said, not every amend can be made face-to-face, and some of them are not best handled in that fashion. There are phone amends, letter amends, living amends, gravesite amends. The surest route for each amend ought to be considered with forethought and caution. This is why we have God and a person taking us through the steps. Harold?
Absolutely. That's really the essence of it. And we don't tell anyone what to do. All we do is share our experience and then have a conversation about it. And we talk about what we were like, what happened, what we're like now, and that way the person can make their decision with maximum information, with both eyes open, and that's how to really go about it. So, Joseph?
Yeah, Harold, I think the face-to-face is real important versus the letter, intranet, telegram, Landshark, the big book actually says, in anything we're supposed to go wherever possible to the person we have harmed. Takes humility.
Wow.
To humble yourself.
Oh,
this is where we're learning. Humility,
you know,
is when we go to
the
face-to-face.
The Rum Radio.
I like to think of humility as like underwear.
A lot of energy, but I'm starting
it's
to back
essential,
off
unless it
years,
shows,
minutes,
and then it's indecent.
We're in 137 foreign countries.
I explained to my sponsees that humility is when every man, woman, and child becomes a teacher. And you're willing to learn.
Villages.
You become the perpetual
and,
student.
And
so when you're going face-to-face to someone and you hat in hand, checkbook at the ready, if you got it, or the installment plan if necessary, and you give them a sincere, heartfelt apology, and try to see what can be done to make wrong, to make right what was once made wrong. Most people are very open to that. I also explain to my sponsees, not all the time. Now, the person you're going up to might have just gotten a traffic ticket. His wife might have just told him she wanted a divorce. They have a very sick child. He just lost his job. He might lose his home. The dog just died. And here you come, the last SOB that he'd ever expected to see again. It was goodbye and good riddance. For whatever he felt that you owed him, he was satisfied with your disappearance. And here you come. Oh, brother. You get the picture, Harold?
Yes, it's so great for you to paint a picture like that, because we never know what we're interrupting when we approach someone, when we knock on a door, when we make a phone call. But I do agree, face-to-face is best, and then we must remember not to be attached to how the amend is received. It may be received, it may not, but we still must make the amend. Joseph?
Sometimes what we'll get, say, I had a friend of mine, Charlie, that stayed with me for a while. He was in the program and came upon hard times, so I gave him a place to sort things out. And he told me, he said, sometimes it's left-handed anger, where there was something bothering the other person. We call that, there's a spiritual axiom that if we're disturbed for whatever reason, there's something wrong with us. And if your person you're making the amends to is disturbed, there might be something wrong with him, but that's not our business. There's no telling. It's like making a phone call in the middle of the night. You have no idea what he's involved in at that moment. And so you go there. Now, we don't have to be anybody's doormat. Big Book is real explicit about that. We go there. We're on a mission. You know, we've asked God to come with us. We've asked our sponsor to buoy us up with information. And now we've taken a step. We've taken a step towards God by making these amends, to getting us whole again. And when we do that, no matter what the reaction is, we quietly take it. If it's a tongue lashing, we take the lashing. You know, if the guy's really rude and he doesn't want to talk, you know, that's his business. That's good. You've done enough. You've made the attempt. The intention was correct. It all boils down to intentions. If the intention was correct and the action which was taken was sincere, that's all that's required. If he doesn't want to accept your apology, I've had people not accept my apology. I had somebody in the program. They refused to accept I asked them for forgiveness about being a jerk, and they wouldn't do it. And that it was at a airport on the way back from Crested Butte. And I walked across the aisle, sat down, and right next to a fellow who was just coming off a bender. We had a nice long talk. It was a 12-step call. And then I told him where to find his intergroup back where he lived. And when they called us on the commuter plane, I was all the way in the back. And the guy sitting next to me was my 12-step call. So I got to chat with him about AA from the whole trip. And I believe by attempting to make the amends, it put me in a fit spiritual condition, and the rest of it unfolded exactly the way God wanted it to unfold. So, Harold, I guess we're about it. This is Rum Radio. We're in 137 foreign countries, including Louisiana, 2,275 towns, cities, and villages, and 142,000 hits to the website. It's a good work. This is helping a lot of people throughout the world. Actually, the biggest place, the most hits we're getting is in Beijing, China. I don't know why Beijing. I think maybe because of the spiritual lilt to the website. And they've hadn't had any type of spiritual awakening for such a long time. So I think it's dropping water on a dry sponge. But if you have the opportunity, take a look at the site and then open your mouth and pass it on. See you on the radio, rumradio.org. rumradio.org. Good night.
Good night.